is not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. It's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces slaving for almighty dollar bills.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Dr. Nicholas Baham III. On today's program, we will take a critical look at impeachment, Trump, and the media attention it has garnered. Please stay with us.
Thinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise, democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. And the times for the master thief, divine conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love up with our brothers and our sisters.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Dr. Nolan Higdon in studio with my co-host Desiree McSwain and Dr. Nicholas Baham III. And later on, our special announcer, Amy Casey, will be with us. We have the whole gang in here today. And we're excited to say that we are broadcasting from our new studio at California State University, East Bay in Hayward, California. We also have some exciting announcements. If you love the Project Censored Show, and I know you do, we want to bring you more of it. And we found that we just record so much content, we're going to start placing it online, extra content. And you can access it at projectcensored.org/radio. And you'll get content there that you do not hear on the air. So if you want more Project Censored, you can go there. Also, it's really uncensored. There's no FCC rules. And so that really benefits Desiree, who swears constantly. So we're lucky that we can have that. It takes like 6 hours to record a show with her. You listeners wouldn't understand. But yeah, go to projectcensored.org/radio to find more of our content. And we also want to hear from you. So if you want to have us read your feedback or read your feedback on the air, send us an email at projectcensoredradio@gmail.com. That's projectcensoredradio@gmail.com. Actually, we had some feedback from a show a while back. I think Nick got some feedback about why we're having white people talk about hip-hop or something like that.
Yes, and then I had to properly identify that the person that we brought into the studio, Shada Akbarian, is actually Persian. Not that that matters, because hip-hop is global, but is really deeply centered in a Persian community out here in the Bay Area that has appropriated hip-hop and uses hip-hop, in particular some Persian feminist rappers and DJs. So that just provided a great opportunity for a great discussion.
See? And there was you. And there was me.
Yes,
and there
exactly.
Was, the MC we had.
An MC, yeah.
So, yeah, guys.
Well, see, that's why we love this feedback. It gives us conversations. There you go.
Perhaps we should, when we do a program like that next, we should identify ourselves. I should say Dr. Nicholas Baham. Black,
right?
Desiree Schwartz, McSwain,
black, brown, Desiree, black, yeah.
Gender identity, sexual preference,
correct. Race, you just run down the whole list.
Who are you?
Right.
So, if you'd like to give us any more feedback, we'd love to hear it. Send us an email at projectcensoredradio@gmail.com, and maybe we'll read it on the air. All right. So there's a ton of stuff on the roundtable to get to this week. I believe, Nick, you want to talk about some of the celebrity Chris Cornell death we saw.
Yeah, so as a musician myself, this kind of hit me hard, and I started looking into this just a little bit. I've just begun. So, you know, one of the things that after Chris Cornell passed, I started looking into recent deaths of some of our great sort of paradigm-shifting musicians. And I think we can definitely add Chris Cornell of Soundgarden and Audioslave to this. One, Michael Jackson, who we know Michael was doing Percocet, Darvocet, and Demerol. And that this, remember, this started back in 1984 with the Pepsi incident where he burned his head, his scalp. And then Prince on the sedatives of clonidine, hydroxyzine, pamoate, and diazepam. Also oxycodone that his security guard was picking up for him. And now with Chris Cornell, his wife has been talking about the fact that this wasn't really a suicide per se, but that his behavior, his mood may have been affected by an anti-anxiety drug called Ativan. So I started looking into this. I mean, obviously, you know, our media stars are kind of on the cutting edge for us of things that are going on in our society. I found that every day in America, there are at least 1,000 people who are treated in emergency departments for not using prescription drugs as directed. But I think we also need to begin critiquing the prescription drug industry, the drug industry, that is killing our great musicians and killing our citizens.
Yeah, I can agree more. This goes back to every single addictive substance on earth, but the user always gets the blame. It's this blaming the victim, but I know very few people, actually none, who can make pills out of their garage. So there's this industry that's flooding it, and doctors who are prescribing it and making it available. And I would argue that's the problem, the flow of it, not the individuals who get addicted to these substances.
Mm-hmm. And they advertise them on our television like they used to advertise cigarettes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the misdiagnosing, too, that's a big thing. Or I think in the earlier show when we were mentioning that you either don't get prescriptions for what you need, or you get prescriptions that you don't need for something that they're not necessarily going to address, or what they're supposed to address can in turn increase that. So if you're getting, you know, some anti-anxiety or some antidepressants, it's a huge possibility that you'll be twice as likely to be even more depressed and possibly kill yourself and all these things. So you hear that with almost every, no matter what it is, if it's like preparation H or something like that, you can possibly make it worse by using it. So at the end of the day, it's like, what is really the safest way to do it?
That's correct. I love the way they advertise for this, right? So it's like, you know, this will cure you of restless leg syndrome, may also cause severe internal bleeding and thoughts of suicide.
And more restless leg syndrome.
And more restless leg syndrome.
I know, they read it like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah. So,
right. You have to like slow it down to understand. But yeah, it's part of this thing, this new mechanism of victim blaming. I remember it was a powerful documentary I watched about, you know, these kids who got addicted to opiates and couldn't afford their opiate addiction on pills, and so then they turned to heroin and ended up dying. And this mother said this really thing that struck me. She said, you know, if I told you my son had cancer, you'd all be holding me and crying. But, you know, when it's addicted to pills for some reason, like, he's the problem, attack him.
That's right.
You know, and it's this, there's this stigma about it in the culture that it's not taken as seriously as it should.
And that stigma is now being turned into policy with our new Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. You like it when I pronounce it. That give it that Southern flavor, I know. But
it's got that drawl.
Yes, exactly. But the increase in minimum sentencing for drugs, going back to the war on drugs, police policy and criminal policy that we had, that was proved largely ineffective. I know we're seeing a little bit of pushback against that, because right now we're dealing with a drug epidemic in primarily suburban white communities. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, you know, the prescription drugs like this, as well as methamphetamine. Now all of a sudden everybody cares, where they didn't really care during the crack epidemic. But it's going to have the same, no matter, you know, who it impacts, it's going to have the same disastrous effects. You're not going to deal with the root problem. And it seems to me like when I look at Michael Jackson, Prince, and now Chris Cornell, isn't this sort of isn't the response to this really drug treatment and not drug sentencing? I mean, isn't that really the way that this should go? Shouldn't this man, I'm talking about Chris Cornell, have had, I don't know, better coaching, better whatever it is, on how to take the drugs that he was taking? Particularly because, you know, they keep switching you from drug to manage the anxiety so they can find the sweet spot.
And I think that, you know, goes to a larger discussion of health care in America. I think the Affordable Care Act started this discussion about access to health care, which is a problem without a doubt affecting millions of Americans. But there's also some serious problems with the way the for-profit industry is ran, which kind of got swept under the rug in this discussion of access to health care. And, you know, this, like you said, giving prescription drugs, people who don't need it, not informing people, risking people's lives, trying to speed things up, maximize money. There's a lot of other problems there. And that's why, you know, with Congress and the Fuhrer Trump trying to remove the little gains that were in the Affordable Care Act, that's like a mountain we still have to climb, and we're not even getting into that discussion at this point nationally.
But the drug abuse, too, it's interesting because on one side of the coin, you have people who have abuse or have abused drugs, may be clean, may be coming out, and they might need antidepressants, or they might have been in an accident and they might need to take a painkiller or something like that. And they are so judged and so ostracized that they possibly will put themselves in further pain or suffer because they're afraid to be called an addict again, or the world's telling them there's no way you should be taking any of that. You were an addict. And then on the other hand, people who were addicts who have became addicts, like you said, Nick, there's no addressing the mental health issue or any of the trauma that these people have been through that caused them to use and abuse. It's just sorry you got stuck on the drug that nobody else did, or I didn't. So, you know, that's your problem.
And I hate to think about the hell that Chris Cornell was going through in that hotel room right before he hung himself. It must have been tremendous. At 52, still out on the road, you know, doing your thing, and then to make that decision all of a sudden that you're going to end it, and perhaps even largely because of the influence of the Ativan.
Mm-hmm.
There may actually be a debate that we see in the public sphere about whether it was Ativan or whether it was his past with illegal drugs. The one debate I would love to see is about marijuana,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not legalizing marijuana can help us deal with some of this stuff.
Yeah. We always can't get to the weed.
We always can't get to the weed.
It's the gateway, they say.
Right, right. But I know
I'm ready to open up the gates. Let's discuss it.
Right, but I know that there have been discussions about how certain forms of anxiety, even I saw something recently where there was a patient who was dealing with symptoms from severe MS. Smoking marijuana really calmed things down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it cures many of things. I'm a huge marijuana advocate, and I use it myself medically. And I have chronic migraines that I wouldn't be able to even live certain days if I didn't. So. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go in and get the shot
in
order to do it because of the marijuana. That's great.
Yeah.
Because the shot is precisely the kind of thing that can lead to these deaths that we're talking about here, Michael Jackson, Prince, and Chris Cornell. You get sort of that institutionalized, then you get a security guard, bodyguard to bring it to you, and you start doing it without proper supervision or some quack doctor is not properly supervising it, like in the case of Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and I know with me, I'm pretty much self-medicating, but my doctor knows. But I had to tell her, like, you've prescribed nothing but antidepressants and things that are also classified as antidepressants that are supposed to help my headache too, but I'm 30 pounds heavier and depressed now and still have headaches.
Wow.
So
does that mean that you'd then have to, if you stayed on that route, that you'd have to take the thing for depression, or excuse me, for headaches, and then take something else for the depression
possibly
caused by the medication?
Yeah.
That is, yeah, okay. And then restless leg after that.
Right. That's what I always wonder about these, something to always just kind of reflect on. We make things illegal, like the Bush administration with stem cell research or marijuana. How much research and critical findings have we missed as a result of the time we've wasted on this? And how much human suffering have we allowed to take place as a result of this? Like the implications are much, much larger than we sometimes realize. I know we're going to, next week on the program, we're having Dr. Julie Frechette, and we're going to talk about sexism in media, looking at Fox. But I also noticed that recently there's been more and more allegations of racial discrimination at Fox News, and there looks like there's a class action lawsuit coming against Fox on that issue. This included, people who had videos and on-the-ground journalism reporting on African-American communities. These stories were nixed because they, quote, painted African Americans in too positive of a light. And so they weren't put on programs like the O'Reilly Factor and these things. And I think it fits with what's been said about sexism at Fox, with racism at Fox, which is, if you've been paying attention, you knew this. But now the actual how it's done behind the scenes is sort of being exposed with these lawsuits.
I think, even if you go back to what's really famous to me was the Bill O'Reilly interview that he did with Damon Dash, who was formerly with Rockefeller Records, and Cam'ron, the rapper, and how he just totally, he was just nothing but antagonizing them. And as much as they tried to present themselves, he would bait you out there with certain words, pull you in, and then tell you in your face that you're a bad reflection on your community and your people, in his opinion. And that's probably the nicest way he's ever said it, too. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's something to say for these networks, like, as a black woman and Nick as a black man, do you even waste your time watching these networks and ever anticipate something not biased or not racist to emerge? I mean, because it seems to me, if we know that there's a larger system of racism, white supremacy, these are the specific outlets that they use to flood that whole bias and flood that whole perception to mainstream America. So it's expected.
You know, to be honest with you, I watched Melissa Harris Perry, and I watched Joy Reid, and I watched Lawrence O'Donnell because I know that he provides desks to young people in Africa. My media, in that sense, my corporate media viewing is very compartmentalized because of that. Now, I realize that everybody else is doing that in the country, that they're siloed. But I think because of that, because of the silencing of our voices and the way that we're portrayed in very negative ways, I can't engage with it. I hear about it through my Facebook feed or whatever, and Facebook has issues too with respect to that as well. I'll read it on the Griot or something like that. But I am actually very deeply invested more and more every day in news and information sites that are produced by people who have had my shared experience. You don't necessarily need to look like me. Lawrence O'Donnell doesn't look like me, but I like the work that he's doing, right? And I support that work, so then I support the show for that reason.
All right, so Amy's here to tell us what is on the show today, the Project Censored Show.
Thank you, Nolan. Amy Casey here with the Media Freedom Foundation. Today, the gang will discuss an article from Robert Reich of UC Berkeley titled, "We Already Have 4 Good Reasons to Impeach Trump, and a Fifth May Be on the Way." Before we begin, a few reminders for our listeners. Please send us feedback for the show. We absolutely want to hear it. You can send your feedback to projectcensoredradio@gmail.com. And in order to keep the show on the air, we need you to show your love and support for us. And if you could do that by going to projectcensored.org/radio to learn how you can support the Project Censored show.
Cool. Thank you, Amy. Yeah, I'm interested to talk about this huge, huge news story. You know what I'm talking about? Toby Keith going to Saudi Arabia, right?
Oh, that one.
No. Unfortunately, he's going there protected. But no, I'm here interested in talking about the potential discussion of impeachment and Trump and media. And I think, as our listeners have probably heard now, Trump fired the head of the FBI, and there's these questions about whether this was motivated by the FBI's investigation of connections between Trump and Russia. And then Trump tweeted out that he's been recording Comey, and Comey better watch what he says publicly. And so then the Washington Post, New York Times claim that Trump is leaking classified information to foreign diplomats, in particular Russia. And as a result, the Department of Justice appointed a special prosecutor who was Robert Mueller, which I found kind of interesting. I mean, you know, just digging, doing my own research, this is a former friend of Comey who worked at the FBI to try and prevent the Bush White House, actually, from doing their own attorney general scandal. So, but nonetheless, now there's been talk about, will this lead to impeachment? And as it stands now, you would need the House to ask for impeachment, and then the Senate, you would need all the Democrats plus 19 Republicans and 2 independents, just to give our listeners an idea of where we're at. But when we come back, we're going to discuss Robert Reich's article, the constitutional arguments for it, and give our interpretations of it. So we'll be back after this short musical break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Dr. Nolan Higdon in studio with my co-host Desiree McSwain and Dr. Nicholas Baham III.
So Robert Reich is a Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and a senior fellow at the Blum Center for Developing Economies. He served as Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. We wanted to open up a discussion about something that he raised on his resistance report in one of the May editions of that video series. And these are the four, possibly five, grounds for impeachment, to which I would actually like to add a sixth piece that is not so much a grounds for impeachment, but just a straight-up criminal offense. So the first of these is, for Robert Reich, is Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. The oath of office has a promise to faithfully execute the laws and the Constitution. Reich alleges that Trump is unfaithfully executing the laws and the Constitution by accusing his predecessor of undertaking an illegal and impeachable act, that being the act of wiretapping Trump, and doing so in particular without a scintilla of evidence.
Yeah, I think, this discussion of impeachment is interesting on numerous fronts. I mean, you know, one thing I think to keep in mind, though, tell my listeners, is that, you know, the Watergate scandal, we often think of it as the downfall of Nixon, but really, it really did hurt the country as a whole. I mean, the Democrats were the ones cheerleading around the idea that government works, right? You have Johnson promoting the Great Society and the Civil Rights Act of 64, and you have this strong movement for equal pay for women and representation going on at that time. But Watergate really was one of the biggest things, I think, that helped Republicans. They used it to say, look, government doesn't work. You know, this has always been the old adage of conservatives, which is, you know, we believe government doesn't work, and we have the candidates to prove it, as P.J. O'Rourke used to say. So, they would get into office and make government a disaster and then point to it as reasons why to dismantle government and sort of maintain their power. And so in this case of these offenses against Trump, it's important to note there's really no precedent for impeachment. Andrew Johnson was impeached for breaking tenure of office rule, but that was then overthrown. Clinton for lying under oath, but even that could only garner 50 votes at max for that. And then Nixon actually stepped down before he was impeached. So I think Reich, what he's done here with this case about what Trump's impact is on the country is really kind of brilliant. He's laying out an argument of what impeachment should look like, where the Founding Fathers kind of left a big blank spot for that. And these vitriolic attacks on Barack Obama's presidency, I think, you know, this demonstrates the massive weakness of Trump. Trump could campaign, and he knew how to create a great media campaign. And even whether you love him or hate him, you have to admit that. I mean, the guy did garner votes for that. But now he's still acting as president as if he's campaigning. You can't keep attacking Obama when you're in office. And I think, as Reich points out here brilliantly, it has a constitutional impact.
It does. And, you know, I think it's sad to think that, first of all, with Trump going after Obama, he's been in a fight with Obama for several years. And he's continuing to do this, but he's now engaged in another fight with Comey, and I find the optics of that fascinating. When you see Comey, this guy who's 6'8", standing over the 6'1", whatever. Trump has lied, I know, about his height at various times.
Trump's lied?
Yeah, believe it or not, yeah, and about his height, about other anatomical features as well. Small hands. The other area, so we gave the first one, which was Article 2, Section 2. The other one that Reich talks about is Article 1, Section 9, the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. This one specifically forbids government officials from taking things of value from foreign governments. But here, Reich argues that Trump is making money off his international hotels by steering foreign diplomats to them. And he will also make money off of China agreeing to grant his trademark applications for the Trump brand.
Yeah, this is, I mean, there's no, again, you know, there's no precedent for this, but he's clearly using the office for his bottom line gain. And at what point does it become bribery? I guess, you know, I guess Congress unfortunately has to be the ones to answer
that
question.
I think we're past that. Yeah, I do think we're past that.
Yeah, it's you know, it's beyond that question. I mean, even the Bush administration, even Dick Cheney, they gave up their shares they had in these companies that I would say they clearly still benefited, but nonetheless gave these shares to these companies while in office. But Trump has just maintained using the office as sort of another wing of his empire of bad hotels.
Mm-hmm. And again, does this unmask something new, or is this something that we've always seen in American government? This sort of plutocratic shift here in the Republican Party. Is that new? Is Trumpism, in with respect to the violation of Article 1, Section 9, is that different? Or is it the same thing as, say, Teapot Dome or Dick Cheney and Halliburton, you know, or any number of crimes of double dipping, right, for our government officials?
Yeah, I would say it seems new. I haven't been around very many elections, but I definitely have done my research on a lot. But it seems like this is new in a sense of how far and how intense Trump is taking it and how confident he is, really confident in, I think, the stupidity of a lot of people and confident in the capitalistic nature that we're surrounded by. Because, like you said, it's past bribery, and it's almost ridiculous to this point. It's like he might as well come to work with a Russia hat on or something at this point and just pass out, like, free passes to Russia and hotel vouchers. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of swagger here from Trump, isn't there?
Yeah, and I agree, and I think that fits with Desiree's point there as well, which is that it's been this cycle of over time. I think each administration has, like, been able to push just a little further in showing how much they're ripping off the American people and using, like, this political process to their advantage. And, you know, Trump has really just sort of been like, nah, no reason to hide it. I can flaunt it. Right. I'm proud of it. Right. Look what I accomplished. Yeah. That's why every bill he signs, he has to hold up like a, you know, like a little child that just painted something in the kitchen.
Was it John Dean who recently said that this basically is Watergate, just 50 IQ points lower?
John Dean made famous by the Watergate case himself.
Right. So the third one here that Reich points out is the First Amendment. Violation of the First Amendment, which bars making any law respecting an establishment of any religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, this was not law, but an executive order that Reich is talking about, in particular, the travel ban barring six Muslim countries, notably none of the Muslim countries in which Trump has a property, but six Muslim countries and their citizens from entering the United States.
Yeah, I think this is demonstrative. This law, I mean, without a doubt, Trump has broke it, but this law, like so many others, has demonstrated what oppressed people have known in this country for centuries, which is the laws aren't worth the paper they're written on unless there's someone there to enforce them.
That's right.
So you can have, yes, your freedom of religion, but if there's people in power who want to take it away and no one who has the will to enforce it, you'll watch that right disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can remember, like, comedians like George Carlin talking about this back in, like, the 80s and 90s, right, about you think you have rights until, you know, talk to Japanese Americans during World War II about their rights, you know, talk to African Americans of the South about their rights.
Right.
So, yeah, this is another one where I think where this whole conversation of we're going through is going to get to, which is where is the will of the American people to stand up for these values, so not make this a political issue, but say, you know, we do value the idea you can come here and believe anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we do value the idea that our politicians should not be tied to foreign governments and should not be trying to profit off the office of the presidency. Mm-hmm. We value that as as a democracy. And I think that's kind of the question that's at the heart of this. Including, you know, value the president to faithfully execute the laws and the Constitution. You know, it's so funny that this document, the Constitution, is like supposedly worshipped by this large swath of this country. But anytime there's an opportunity for a president or a Congress to, like, use it as toilet paper, it's somehow patriotic. And you don't hear, like, the outcry against it, especially when it comes to Republicans being in office. But I would argue Democrats as well.
I would argue that, too. The fourth one is also First Amendment. It's barring the abridging the freedom of the press. So we've seen the Trump administration calling the press the enemy of the people and barring journalists from press conferences on the basis of whether or not they have given Trump favorable coverage.
So this is going to be one that hits near and dear to,
that's right,
to my heart for sure. You know, it's funny, just growing up, I grew up in the 1980s, listened to a lot of Def Leppard. But in the 80s, there was the press was always sort of seen as like evil in movies, right? They're like evil, conniving, disgusting people, which, you know, is true for a lot of the ones who work in corporate press. But the press is, they serve such an important function of a democracy. They are our fourth estate. And the way he's been able to politicize fact, and by the way, I keep saying him, but this is a long process that's been going on since the late 1970s of attacking journalists for being critical of the establishment and somehow making that political bias rather than fact-based reporting. I think he's setting up a serious, not only constitutional problem, but this post-truth problem here, which is where people think if you criticize Trump with evidence, you're somehow like un-American and some like liberal conspirator.
Or even without evidence. It just seems like if you dispute the president or any American ideal, then you're not a patriot, you're not American, and this and that. And it's almost, I want to push it further and let's really dive into what is patriotic, because that word came up a lot around Bill O'Reilly or Ailes or those people, like he was a patriot and he was doing some of the most disgusting, vile stuff. So what exactly is a patriot? Because as far as I've heard, I don't want to be a patriot. And I don't really fit that build. So I'd like to hear, you know, what people's opinions on that is.
It's a good point. You think like being a patriot would be tied to like upholding the law or the ideals of the Constitution or democracy. But apparently you have that wrong, Desiree. The patriots are the ones who destroy those things and pretend like they don't exist and try and undermine them at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is it the willingness to live to die for your country, or is it the willingness to lie, cheat, and steal, allegedly for your country, but also for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which of those is it actually? Because that's what I see going on with this administration.
Yeah.
Then there's also Article 3, which defines. Then this is the article that defines treason. This is the Reich maybe moment, okay? Because this is still developing, where treason is defined as adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So Reich makes the argument that as the Russian collusion piece unfolds, that if that's provable, colluding with Russian operatives to win the 2016 election is a treasonous act.
So this is one that I think has been, you know, we're going to have to get into some interesting definitions, not of patriotism, but
But and treason.
Treason, like this collusion element, I've sort of battled back and forth over this one, right? Because we know people collect like political data. Every campaign does it. They collect political data. So it's really like the content. So who is providing it? Is it like a Russian or is it the Russian government? Mm-hmm. Is it a hack? So I think the treason question there is very interesting. I also, want to sort of talk about this term enemies. Cold War, you know, was like over in 91. They were supposed to be allies, but now they've become like this enemy status, and no one's really questioned as to why. Like, why is it their enemy status? Why are these enemies like everywhere around the world? Why do we have so many enemies? And I don't remember like a congressional discussion about this to make them enemies, right? We just start using it in our rhetoric, and now we see it being attempted to apply to constitutional law here. Mm-hmm.
So would in your view, would this be treasonous if the French had intervened in our elections, had hacked our elections?
I think hacking or intervention absolutely is a treasonous act.
Okay.
But it depends as to what, right? So if like an individual in France has this information and gives it to Trump, I would say, you know, mm-hmm. Trump is guilty of breaking election law. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's necessarily treason mm-hmm. in that degree, but...
But if that person were a government operative...
Then I think you're working with a foreign government, and then I think you've committed treason.
Right, and then it may not really matter whether it's an ally or quote-unquote enemy.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's where I think the sort of rabbit hole that I've been afraid that liberals have been going down about this treason. And I think what Reich does here in the examples before this one says, look, you don't even need to debate this treason, right. Russia hacking thing. There are plenty of other reasons this guy could be removed from office.
Right. Which brings me to number 6, and this is my ad for it. Frequently, and we go back to Watergate on this, you're not caught for the crime. You're caught for the cover-up. So what we really have here is obstruction of justice. I think that's what we're seeing unfold. Maybe that's what we'll get to with the appointment of Mueller as a special prosecutor in this. That tends to be where people get caught.
So we're going to talk about this issue of obstruction of justice and what we think the potential impact of this political discussion is right after this short musical break.
I've got news for you. walked in smiling with your lipstick all a mess. Oh, let me say it to you, little mama. Whoa, I've got news for you. Your story don't ring true, little girl. Yeah, I've got news for you.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Dr. Nolan Higdon in studio with my co-hosts, Dr. Nicholas Baham and Desiree McSwain, and we were discussing Professor Robert Reich's five reasons to impeach Trump, potentially six, according to Dr. Baham. And so we've reviewed these, and right before we went to break, Dr. Baham was discussing this idea that usually it's covering up the crime that gets people caught. And I wondered if you could explain a little bit to our listeners about sort of what Nixon did and how you think that is comparable to Trump.
So, I mean, it wasn't that you could effectively link Nixon to the Watergate break-in. It was the fact that, he covered it up. You could link him to covering it up, which then suggests that, you know, he's linked to the actual break-in, right? So with Trump asking Comey, hey, you know, can you kind of back off of this investigation, and firing him and sort of weighing in on the process. I mean, when you're being investigated, you're not supposed to talk to the investigator about the investigation, okay? If I get prosecuted for something, I can't call the prosecutor and say, you know, kind of, how's it going, first of all? And, you know, how much dirt do you actually have on me? And then can you kind of back off of it in some way, because that'd be kind of cool. Where I invite you over, we have ice cream. I get two scoops, you get one, which is what happened here. And I ask you to back off kindly and gently. And I think that's the piece that he could get caught up on. I don't know. I mean, it's certainly grounds for criminal prosecution, which in and of itself would probably be impeachable as well.
Right. And so all these, and I think, you know, I agree with you. I think that usually it's people covering up the crimes they're
yes.
caught. And I think that's happening here with
Trump.
You
start digging. You know, sort of like this goes back to like the old narrative of the noir film, right, where the detective doesn't actually catch you doing the crime. Mm-hmm. It's that as he's investigating, you're trying to cover up desperately, and you get caught covering it up. Columbo used to do this all the time. He couldn't actually catch you doing the thing. But it's on some level, you know, you start to act guilty because you are guilty.
Mm-hmm. And right? You put yourself right
telltale in the heart type stuff, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah.
So it brings like a larger question of procedure, right? Which is like, do you think that this Republican Congress has the will to seriously look into any of these? Like Mueller's appointed now, so we have a special prosecutor, but he is from the FBI, which seems like potentially a good thing, but I could also see it as kind of a distraction, right? Where if he finds nothing, he could say, look, we put Comey's friend, we put an FBI guy there. What more do you want? But on the other hand, maybe, you know, Mueller will find something and do what's right and go with prosecution. But then it's really up to Congress. I mean, we have mm-hmm. checks and balances, but mm-hmm. you need a body to check and balance, mm-hmm. and that's Congress. So, I mean, what do you two think about that as far as, like, any likelihood of Congress actually doing, you know, their job?
I was a little bit faithful, and I don't know, you can tell me how you feel about that, but because Mueller was friends with Comey and because of the situation with Comey and Trump, I almost had a little bit of faith because of that brotherhood of the FBI and me having their back, they having my back. And if you're going to attack one and I'm stepping in, I'm going to kind of stand to that. But you don't really know in these situations or in these agencies really at all. And then you just brought up a really good point, which is, are they just going to kind of like halfway investigate and then just throw it up and say, well, you know, we did what we had to do. There's nothing else to that, because we don't really know how he's in with Trump and Mueller, I mean, so.
Because that's what I saw happen in the 80s, and I mean, you can remember this too, is the Iran-Contra. I
yes.
mean, you had everything to catch this administration
yes.
red-handed, and
yes.
they did a little dog and pony show on TV,
yes.
and most
yeah.
people don't even know about this, you know,
their
scandal.
Cover-up was better, though, because they put it on to one lieutenant colonel
right.
who fell on his sword faithfully and then was rewarded for it and continues to be rewarded for that. But I would say that you have to sort of submit this. I mean, we're in a capitalist society. Let's submit it to a cost-benefit analysis. I actually think that there's issues here for Republicans and Democrats. So Republicans, look, Paul Ryan's getting to jam his agenda through as long as the useful idiot is in office. Mm-hmm. He can just do what he wants to do. He, you know, attack your Medicare. Maybe they can go after something else, okay, as soon as the heat dies down. If the heat gets way too hot for them to ram through their agenda, and we're going to see this through the rest of the year, the next 6 months, if they can get through tax cuts and this health care plan, the way they want to get through this health care plan while the man is being investigated, then you have to say that on a cost-benefit analysis, it's okay for them to keep him in. Now, if it gets too hot and it ruins their agenda, well, you got another equally competent guy behind him, and I say equally competent in quotes, behind him, who you can ramrod your agenda through, because the next guy, Pence, is viewed as a Boy Scout, mm-hmm. even though we know that he's not. Sort of the dark side of the Boy Scouts. For Democrats, there's a cost-benefit analysis, too. I could easily see how the average Democratic Party politician could say, you know what, no. Let's investigate it, stall his agenda for 4 years, never impeach him, and actually after 2 years, test this out in the midterm elections. Can we get back the House if we drag him through the mud? Because you know how the American memory is. So this guy has been investigated quicker than any American president within 150 days. Okay, you got an investigation. That's unprecedented. That's very new territory. Can you carry the thing through to the midterm elections and use it politically to be able to take back the House? And then a couple years after that, can you retake the White House? Simply by running anybody who's appealing, who can say, look, the dude is on is being investigated.
Yeah.
We can't go any further with these allegations. We can't do another 4 years of this.
Yeah, and I think if Trump showed us anything, it's you can run anybody. But the other thing that I think is closely related to that I would be interested to hear your guys' opinion on this for sure, which is. With the election of Trump, I saw this, particularly this young white male just felt really empowered by the election of Trump, like willing to push the bar a little further in their overt racism, right? And I noticed this in my classrooms, I've noticed this in the streets, I've noticed this in bars and discussions. Say he does get impeached, say you get your wish here and he's found guilty and he's removed from office. And I don't really care what happens to Trump, but what I'm really worried about is that large population on the streets who felt so empowered, who feel the media, liberals, immigrants, non-whites, mm-hmm. feminists are all out to get them. And then they see that they feel they had this major victory and it's now being taken away from them. And I'm very concerned at what the backlash is going to be from something like that if it occurred.
I'm not too worried. It's definitely being the total opposite of black women than the white man and the white man structure. But I mean, you see the Confederate rallies and the KKK rallies that are happening recently and even in our capital in Sacramento. And it's almost like they know that this is their last fighting chance. And they knew that coming in when they saw Trump, somebody who spoke their language, who totally went against everything that they're supposedly supposed to be believing in, who really, they know that they are the minority. We are constantly black, brown, women, poor. We're constantly perpetuated as a minority. But this white male, the young white male with that type of ideology really is the minority in this day and age. So I don't think anything would change. I think that we would kind of get the same backlash, the backlash that we're getting now, even with Spencer and people like that. It's ridiculous that we're even dealing with this and that we're also so pacified as a people nationally that we don't really fight against it, and we kind of just spectate and watch it, because they very well could backlash or uprise against tons of people or a specific group of people violently or specifically targeting people based on just feeling empowered by still having the president, or if he is impeached, then feeling disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. Now
I think we have to worry about them getting smarter. And I agree with you, in terms of the violence is there. It's always going to be there. But what I mean by smarter is, and you're right, we're already dealing with this. We're dealing with this now in terms of the infiltration of white nationalists and police forces mm-hmm. across America. Bodies are dropping because of this. But I'm worried about them getting smarter and running for House seats.
Getting organized.
Getting really organized, right? And saying, like if Trump gets impeached, saying, you know what, let's take a lesson here. Let's get some more people who are out about this in the public sphere and can run for House, Senate. Just really put it out there and galvanize this.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, because even to your point, if they do organize or mobilize or whatever they choose to do, again, a large mass of the people, we're still spectating and we're still pacified and we're always reactionary. So we're hoping they don't and we're hoping nothing's going to happen and we're betting on their stupidity. But that's also what we did with Trump. And we're like, well.
Yeah, because I think there's always a chance for that there's somebody right now who says, you know what? I can be a smarter demagogue, right?
Oh, yeah, play the game a little better.
Yeah, I can play the game a little. Trump had the right idea. Because, you know, this is really sort of the fundamental tenet of neo-Nazism. Hitler had the right idea. He just kind of screwed up here or there, two-front war, those kinds of things. If I had my chance, I'd do it a little differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to worry about that person or persons.
For sure. And I think it's, I mean, 2018 is, and you point this out, politics, and you point out the changing demographics. It's a big, big election. The 2016 was the last election where the baby boomers are the biggest chunk of the voting populace. It's now going to be millennials in 2018. And to your point about being pacified, young people usually don't turn out in midterms. You know, there's signs that this is a different type of generation. So maybe that's a plus, but there's also signs of a lot of people angry at what happened with, like, say, the Sanders campaign and maybe have taken the road of turning off politics, which so 2018, I think, is going to be a big sort of year to see if this change is real or if we've, you know, found ourselves in sort of another generation to continue the status quo.
You know, Nolan, you're going into voting now. We did this in 2016. We're going to do it in 2018. We're going to do it in 2020. You're voting now without the Voting Rights Act. So it's a lot of factors. So you have millennials who don't get it. We know that. But you also have the suppression of the votes of people who do get it in a country that by 2025 is going to be a majority-minority country. I think by 2025, our question that we're going to have to ask ourselves is, are we the new South Africa? So do you have majority-minority populations whose vote is suppressed so that you can continue to elect people who are open, out-and-out racist, misogynist, et cetera, like Trump? Braggarts, really, on those issues, because the vote of people of color is suppressed. So there have been some reports that have come out about how much vote was suppressed in Wisconsin, a central swing state. If those votes had been counted, what did he win Wisconsin by? Was it like it was a handful?
It was like a minuscule amount. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the amount of votes, even if you sort of calculated out the amount of votes that would have gone for him versus Hillary Clinton, Hillary would have taken Wisconsin. That would have changed the whole picture. Now, I'm not saying that we'd have Shangri-La because Hillary Clinton was elected, but we certainly wouldn't be going through what we're going through right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very critical point, too, about the voting laws that we don't talk about.
That's right.
You know, this
goes back to what you said earlier about, you know, you can have laws, what George Carlin said. You can have laws, but if you don't have people to enforce them. Unfortunately, the Voting Rights Act needs enforcement, and also they've kind of neutered the Voting Rights Act as well. Because there's this argument of, well, you know the conservative argument's been working for decades. Racism is over with. And so we really don't need the Voting Rights Act anymore. Mm-hmm. We need the Voting Rights Act now more than ever.
Yeah, that's a good point, because even with the demographic like we were talking about and the ideal of it being the young white male who's kind of taking on the older white male, maybe like the Southern plantation ideology. Yeah. But if you looked at the votes, a large amount were from white women. And then there was a smaller amount of minorities who voted for Trump and who were at the rallies. And it's obvious to see the ideology that is perpetuating everybody, you know, who's affected by it. And we're all affected by it through this media that we're talking about, the news, and constantly seeing horrible stereotypes of maybe the people that you represent with or identify with. And now you kind of want that ideal, too. It looks like a great patriotic way to live. I want to live like that. And if you're the woman or the counterpart of your white male or your husband or whoever, you almost identify yourself as that because the gender thing.
That's
and
correct.
We know that that's a huge hurdle that as women, we might not even want to, you know, approach. And a lot of women we saw go against Hillary and go with Trump and identify with what their husbands or partners or brothers or fathers
felt. Right.
And so that's also a very important aspect to look at on what may come and what we may see from other, you know, minorities or other groups, not just that tailor-made idea that we think of racism coming from.
Right.
Before we take a break, just curious, do you guys think it's going to happen in
impeachment?
Yep.
I don't, actually. I don't, because of the cost-benefit analysis that I just laid out for you.
I don't.
I don't either. So that's three cynics. And, so we will be back after this short musical break. You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Dr. Nolan Higdon in studio with Desiree McSwain, Dr. Nicholas Baham III, and I think we've had a pretty good show. Desiree, what would you give this show? What would you rate this show?
11 out of 10.
11 out of 10.
Give us your feedback.
Jeez, give us a feedback, please. We're desperate for it. Well, as everyone knows, we here at the Media Freedom Foundation produce content that illuminates the work of fact-based journalists around the world and offers alternative narratives to the corporate press. Amy Casey, our faithful special announcer, is here to tell us more.
Oh, thank you, Nolan. Again, this is Amy Casey of the Media Freedom Foundation with just some of the stories that we are currently working on. From Citrus College, Professor Project Censored Associate Director Andy Lee Roth and his students Daniel Hayden and Nicholas Duran have nominated a validated independent news story that is a story ignored by the corporate press but covered by the independent press, titled Illinois Lawsuit Alleges Prison Abuse of Inmates by 232 Correctional Officers. The story covers the abuse of inmates in Illinois prison system as outlined in a recent lawsuit. That can be found at projectcensored.org. Also at projectcensored.org, there is a video of Project Censored director Mickey Huff titled Critical Media Literacy Education, The Antidote to Fake News, Propaganda, and Censorship in a Post-Truth World. In the talk, Director Huff outlines how a critical media literacy education can combat the ill effects of fake news and alternative facts. At the Global Critical Media Literacy's webpage, gcml.org, Dr. Rob Williams, the co-president of the Action Coalition for Media Education, and his students from the University of Vermont have released Social Media is Slowly Causing More and More Teens to Suffer from FOMO, FOMO, which is often the feeling of dissatisfaction. The article argues that teens are increasingly focused on what they are missing rather than what they are doing thanks to social media. Also at gcml.org, Materialism, Misogyny, and Masculinity in Hip Hop and Rap. The music industry is more interested in selling a woman's body for profit rather than advance her musical ability as a rap and hip hop artist. This article, written by Dr. Julie Frechette and her student Mackenzie Gaudet at Department of Communication at Worcester State University, documents how gender bias in the corporate music industry remains a prevalent issue affecting female artists and audiences alike through sexualized images, degrading lyricism, and stereotypical normative behaviors. At this time, I would like to remind our listeners to go to projectcensored.org/radio. There you can access free content and show your support for Project Censored. I'm Amy Casey, and that is the news that did not make the news.
Thank you, Amy. Yes, please, go to projectcensored.org/radio. Get some more content. You can get more of that swearing Desiree I was talking about before. And also send us your feedback at projectcensoredradio@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. You've been listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Nolan Higdon with Desiree McSwain, Nicholas Bayham III. I'd like to thank our special announcer, Amy Casey. Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips are executive producers and hosts. Mitch Scorza is our engineer. The Project Censored Show airs on nearly 40 stations around the U.S. Please follow us and like us on Facebook and visit our website at projectcensored.org, where you can find the archives of all of our radio shows for the past 6 years, as well as 40 years of news that didn't make the news. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive force, enslavement for almighty.
Alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. In the times for the master thief, divine conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.